Well, good afternoon and welcome to Safer Transitions, a weekly radio show produced by the Safer Foundation. We're very happy to be here with you on WVON, the Talk of Chicago, here on our seventh and final episode of this season. I'm Victor Dixon, President and CEO of the Safer Foundation, and I'm here in the studio with my co-host, Tony Lowry, Associate Vice President of Community Housing. Tony, how are you today?
Victor, really honored anytime to be in historic WVON studios and just trying to make sure that we provide the best possible information to our listening audience.
Well, you know, Tony, we're going to have some help doing that today. So we have guests here in the studio. Here with us are Ira Laudermilk, Cook County Public Defender's Office, and Charlene Grace from the Chicago Appleseed Fund for Justice. So welcome, ladies. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Doing great. Thank you.
Well, I'm so glad you're here. We appreciate you taking the time to share the work that both of you are doing. For those of you that are not familiar with the Safer Foundation, we're a 46-year-old social impact organization that supports people with arrest and conviction records. And all of our programs and services are geared towards reducing barriers to employment, creating new opportunities, providing services that support our clients' ability to successfully find and retain employment. That includes doing job training and placement, GED education and GED preparation, transitional housing, expungement, record sealing, mental health, substance treatment, whatever is needed to help a person really reenter in a smooth way. So, Tony, can you share with our listening audience how people can contact SAFER?
Yes, Victor. SAFER operates in and around the Chicagoland area. Our main office is at 571 West Jackson Street, with additional offices at 808 South Kedzie, 6352 West Grand in the Belmont-Cragen community, 242 West 162nd Street in South Holland, and also in the Quad Cities at 1702 North Main Street in Davenport, Iowa. We also have a mobile unit where we can bring our services to any community in the Chicagoland area to make sure that people get proper information, assessments, appointments, and actually are ready and get a good start for SAFER services.
So, Tony, if someone wants to reach out to us, what is the contact information that you can share with them?
Well, our website, Victor, is www.saferfoundation.org. You can contact us from the radio show at Safer Transitions at safertransition.org, at saferfoundation.org, excuse me, or by calling us at 888-972-3374 or on social media at Safer Foundation on Facebook and on Twitter.
Okay, thanks, and we look forward to you reaching out to us. You know, I was in our office yesterday, and there was a gentleman in one of our job readiness classes who actually heard about the classes and the kind of opportunities that we have to offer on the radio, and I was very delighted to see him there finishing up a class and getting ready to go on some job interviews. So it's good to know that there are people listening and people that are actually following up on the opportunity. Well, today, you know, as we've done for the past six episodes here, we're going to talk about reentry, and we're talking about some of the things that are going on to continue to assist people to keep them out of the system, to get them out of the system faster. And we're going to talk today a little bit about some things that SAFER Foundation is doing and what's on the horizon. In the past, we've talked about workforce development. We've talked about social enterprises and entrepreneurship, policy and advocacy initiatives. We've had a wonderful conversation about the opioid crisis and really how that's affecting not just the rural, small-town communities, but also right here in the city as well. So we'll talk today about some other initiatives and some things that are coming in the future. So I'd like to start by asking Ira Laudermilk from the Public Defender's Office to really talk a little bit about some critical things that are going on, in fact, going on today. We are excited to have you here. We love working with Amy Campanelli, the public defender. So we're glad that you're there and partnering with her. So, Ira, can you tell us what you do for the public defender's office? And today was a day of action. Can you tell us about that as well?
Sure. So I guess my official title with the public defender's office is Deputy of Policy and Strategic Planning, which is a mouthful. But really, my job is to just help move the office forward and help usher in some of the policies that are near and dear to Amy Campanelli's heart. So that's helping to revamp internal policies as well as working externally with community partners like the Safer Foundation and others to make sure that we're helping our clients be in the best position to help get their foot back on the right track and leave really productive, successful lives outside of the criminal justice system. A part of that is helping to ensure that people aren't being brought into that system unnecessarily, right? So a lot of times you think of the public defender's office and we step in after, you know, a lot of potential damage has been done in terms of the long-term impact that, you know, charges can have on someone's life. So as you mentioned, today is a very special day because our office has partnered with the First Defense Legal Aid to celebrate a day of action to raise awareness of the fact that in Cook County, if someone is arrested and if they are in police custody, if you ask for a lawyer, our office has officially been appointed by Chief Judge Timothy Evans of the Circuit Court to come represent that person during their interrogation. FDLA is a great organization that has been doing this for years on a volunteer basis, and we were very excited to have the opportunity to partner with them and try and sustain that work in a more formal way through the Public Defender's Office. So Amy Campanelli and several members of our office, as well as members of FDLA and some of their volunteer attorneys, are actually at police stations today, ready and available to represent anyone that is in custody today. You know, we hope that having this day of action will help raise awareness to the fact that this is something that's available 24/7 in Cook County, that's in the city of Chicago as well as the surrounding Cook County suburbs.
Well, Ira, that's a very important initiative for the audience to know about. If you're listening on WVON, or iHeartRadio, we invite you to join the discussion by calling us here at the station at 773-591-1690, or you can submit a question on social media at Safer Foundation. Ira, when I was a part of the Chicago Police Accountability Task Force, and one of the things that we discovered during the research phase of that project was that in many cases, people would be detained and questioned, and there was no legal representation. In fact, juveniles being detained and questioned without any kind of representation. So, how will people know that this resource is now available to them? That's one question. And then how can we educate the public before people even find themselves at a station being questioned, you know, as a witness or as an accused person or suspect? How do we educate people so they know what their rights are and what resources are available?
All right. So we are trying to work on multiple fronts right now to help raise awareness so that people understand that this is a service that is now available. Chief Judge Evans entered the order about a year ago, and it has taken our office a little bit of time to kind of rev up and make sure that we have a division within our office that's wholly dedicated 24/7 to have attorneys on call to attend police stations. FDLA has been doing this already for several years. They've been really successful in having a social media campaign and having some other forms of advertisement, which of course costs money. But, you know, we are trying to partner together to go on as many radio shows, TV shows, you know, raise awareness via social media, you know, attend community events and really rely on some of our community partners to make sure that the people that they, you know, come in contact with every day understand that this is a resource. We have flyers. We have business cards. We have a toll-free phone number that we'd like to share as you know, as broadly as we possibly can, so that when people do find themselves in a situation, really we just want them to pick up the phone and call. So whether or not the person is in custody, or if it's a family member or a friend that you know is in custody, or that you, you know, suspect is in custody, call us. It's a toll-free number. If I may, I'd like to share the number on air. That number is 1-844-817-4448. And again, that's 1-844-817-4448. That number connects directly to the Public Defender's Office. We are open 24/7 to dispatch attorneys, regardless of the time, day or night, to go represent that person. And really the role that we play is to help assert that person's rights. So the beautiful thing about it is you call the number, you don't have to necessarily know what all your rights are, because I can imagine when you're in that situation, there must be a lot of things running through your head. You know, your liberty is potentially at stake. And so I think it's a little unreasonable to expect people to be in their best position under that kind of stress to be able to assert their rights on their own behalf. What we really want to stress is everyone knows the Miranda rights by memory at this point, thanks to all of the TV shows like Law and Order, where for the most part you can walk up to anyone on the street and they can recite the Miranda rights, like you have the right to an attorney, you right. think you say can and will be used against you. Right? But the most important part is you have the right to remain silent, right? You have the right to remain silent. So we want to make sure that people know that you can call that number and you can assert your right to remain silent, and we will have an attorney come and help ensure that the rest of your rights are protected as well.
So, okay, do you have some sense or even any data around if a person doesn't have legal representation, are they more likely to be actually charged with something or incarcerated, or, you know, what happens if they don't get representation?
So it's really hard to say, because the data that we have on this shows that less than 0.3% of individuals who are arrested in Chicago even call a lawyer in the first place.
Wow.
What we do know is Chicago doesn't necessarily have the best history of providing fair and reasonable tactics to particularly people of color, right, in our criminal justice system. And that's reflected every day when you walk into court and you see kind of how they treat people of color versus in other neighborhoods where similar activities are taking place. They have a different approach or response, right, in terms of how they use their discretion to move forward with asking that charges be pressed. So it's really hard to say, because there has been such a little number. When you look at the entire criminal justice system, there's so little number of people that's actually been represented, it's hard to say. But I can say, since the Public Defender's Office has gotten into this, we have had attorneys walk kids out of police stations not charged.
Yeah,
kids that were facing very serious allegations, right?
Right.
That were walked out without charges because they just didn't stand, right?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, those numbers are, the representation numbers are so low that really this should be very interesting to see what the difference is in terms of the number of people that enter the system now that they will have representation. That's very important.
I wanted to chime in, Victor, as far as the how critically important this new initiative is with the Public Defender's Office. I have a tragic family story regarding my nephew who didn't have that legal representation and is now doing 75 years in Menard Correctional because not understanding rights, not understanding the right to stay silent, and being punched around a little bit, but again, giving the police what they did and not understanding the tactics. So we were honored to have Public Defender Campanelli at our annual care conference to announce the kickoff of this initiative, but this is critically important. And Era, can you just give that phone number again so that everyone will put this number on their refrigerator to make sure that everyone, because you talked about the disproportionate minority contact, with the legal system, but everyone in our listening audience should have this number and share this number with family and friends.
Sure, I'd be happy to. That number, once again, is 1-844-817-4448, and that is a toll-free number.
And that and that phone number should be also posted in the police station somewhere where a person who's brought in can get that number as well.
Is that's that right. That's correct. So that number should be posted at all of the district police stations as well as the area police stations in Chicago and the suburban police stations within the county.
Yeah, that's great. That's a very, very significant new development and resource. You know, this is of interest to Safer Foundation because, of course, we are working on the back end mainly when people are coming out of the justice system. But it's our hope and desire that we have is as a few people as possible go in the first place. I mean, the real solution is to not have people being really involved and then tagged with a criminal record, arrest or conviction record. So how many public defenders are in the Cook County Public Defender's Office? Do you have a rough idea?
I would say in terms of our staff, the attorneys we have would be just shy of 500, I believe.
And how many people do you actually represent at the Public Defender's Office in a given year?
Well, I don't have that number off the top of my head, but I will say that I believe of all of the criminal cases that are brought in on the Circuit Court of Cook County, we represent about 90% of those criminal cases every year.
About 90%. And, you know, it's something where we really need those resources because having the ability to pay for a lawyer, a defense attorney, is incredibly expensive. So it's a very important service that you provide, and, you know, we really appreciate everything that the Public Defender's Office does. We have some Safer Foundation employees that work with the Public Defender's Office. We have a team of seven people, and they help really work with the public defenders to really develop a better profile of the defendant because sometimes they have a very brief amount of time in order to prepare to go before a judge. And if they don't have information about a person's family and about their education, the fact that they're working, and, you know, you can develop an incomplete picture of a person's life. So having a more complete, holistic picture of their life is very important. And when you go before a judge and they're trying to determine if they're going to detain someone or set bail or release them on their own recognizance. So hopefully that is working for the Public Defender's Office.
Absolutely. That service, that partnership has been invaluable to our attorneys. We have bail court hearings that happen every day. People are arrested every day. They're brought into the system every day. And it's a very short time frame, and a lot of information has to be processed in a very short amount of time. And without the information that the Safer Foundation workers are able to gather from our clients on our behalf before those bail hearings, our attorneys would not be in the position that they currently already be able to effectively advocate on that individual's behalf to the judge to paint a story about who this person is as an individual, share some information about their background that might shed some light on things that may have happened in their past that ultimately wound them up in the current situation that they find themselves in, help really provide that critical, like, mitigating information day one at the bond hearing to the judge. So we really value that relationship, and the people that work at the Safer Foundation that does that for us, they do an amazing job every single day, and we're very grateful.
Well, that's great. We'll pass that on to them. Now, you know, Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle often talks about the jail, you know, being kind of a place where, you know, the justice system and the poverty kind of intersect. And she always talks about the fact that people, most people who are being detained just simply can't afford to bail or whatever to, or, you know, defense attorneys, et cetera. We've been hearing that the jail population has decreased. So at one point it was probably, up to 10,000 people. And I've heard lately that it may be down under 6,500. Is that
actually
correct?
Down around 6,000 now?
Down around 6,000. Yeah. So what do you attribute that to?
I have to give credit to the various Cook County criminal justice stakeholders really coming together. This has not been an overnight process at all, but I have to say that under the leadership of President Preckwinkle and making this a priority in her administration, working with members of the Supreme Court, you know, working with the other stakeholders, including Chief Judge Timothy Evans, Sheriff Tom Dart, the State's Attorney's Office, our office, the Clerk's Office, we all were able to come together and look, recognize that this is a problem. We are, one, it costs a lot of money to incarcerate someone. And when you look at the population of people that we were incarcerating, they didn't necessarily pose a threat to community safety, right? And the whole purpose of pretrial detention is to make sure that you're preserving community safety and making sure that person doesn't pose a flight risk. So we're getting smarter about how we're approaching criminal justice. We use a risk assessment tool now that empowers the judges to make a more informed decision about whether someone poses that risk, so they can make a decision whether or not that person should be released. We've worked together to receive a substantial grant from the MacArthur Foundation to help fund some critical positions and provide us with more capacity to be able to have a strategic, comprehensive, county-wide approach to reducing the jail population. That included Chief Judge Evans, once again, entering an order saying, you know what, the way we've been doing it doesn't work. I'm going to enter an order and say, moving forward, we're going to make sure that the only people that are being sentenced to jail, we're going to make sure that they actually do pose that significant risk. And if we are setting a bail amount, it's something that the judges have to state on the record as an amount that they can actually afford so they can post that bail and return to their families rather than sitting in the jail simply because they couldn't afford this arbitrary amount that was set.
And I'd like to jump in here, Victor, as far as being on two of the MacArthur Justice Challenge Task Force as far as community engagement and their policy task force. The Cook County President's Office, along with the Chief Judge, has done a tremendous job. I think she came in looking at the impact of criminal justice reform as one of her priorities. And I think we talk about the motto that she always uses, that Cook County Jail is the axis of racism and poverty in this area. So we really, I think, echo and congratulate the President's Office, Public Defender, and all the stakeholders who are participating in these task force to really push criminal justice reform forward in Cook County.
You know, Tony, that is really so important because I think there's some evidence that the longer a person sits in the jail, the more likely they are to actually be convicted, and it's a very interesting thing. So it's really exciting to hear about the improvements, the reduction in the jail population. And, you know, I tell the folks at SAFER all the time that really if we're really serious about accomplishing our mission, it would ultimately be that we're not needed. And so, you know, that really is the goal, that we've gotten to the point where we're equitable and fair, and there's not a great need for the work that we do. Unfortunately, right now, there is a huge need. We still have in our state about 4.2 million people with arrest or conviction records, and that means that with only 9 million adults and a total population of 12.8 million people in our state, that we have over 40% of the adult population that has records. And then when you go into certain urban areas, I mean, that number just goes up even higher. That's an incredible issue. In our city, you know, oftentimes when we're out a meeting with people and we talk to people and we ask them, well, what do you think the major problems are in the city? You know, often people will say it's violence, they'll say it's poverty, you know, they'll mention several different things. It's the schools, it's this and that. They never talk about reentry or the number of people with records. And there's probably no issue that affects as many people in our city and in our state, no single issue than that, having a record and the barriers that presents. So, Ira, we want to thank you, thank Amy Campanelli and all of the county board president, the sheriff, the chief judge, our new state's attorney, for all the work you're doing to reform the system and really reduce the population, keep people from going in. It's something that's desperately needed and is greatly appreciated. And thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. So, hey, we're going to take a break. This is Safer Transitions on WBON 1690, the Talk of Chicago, iHeartRadio, the voice of the nation. We'll be back after a quick break.
The Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
Are you or someone you know with an arrest or conviction record struggling to find employment or looking to advance your career? Then go to saferfoundation.org/events and you'll find a list of upcoming sessions that will give you information about a wide variety of employment and career building opportunities. Find out more information at saferfoundation.org/events or on our Facebook page. Are you in need of a one-stop shop for all of your construction needs? Safer Foundation's social enterprise, Reconstruction Technology Partners, is a full-service construction company that provides a wide variety of expert building and repair services. Visit us online at rtpchicago.com or call us for a free consultation at 872-444-5595.
Safer Foundation is hiring. There are immediate needs for intensive case managers and correctional security officers, many of whom have gone on to build successful careers in corrections and law enforcement. SAFER offers a competitive salary, generous benefits, and a leadership team that's committed to making SAFER a great place to work. Check out these and other career opportunities today at saferfoundation.org/careers.
When you see news happening, call the WVON News Now tip line at 773-336-3415 or send an email to news@WVON.com.
WVON.com. The website. Check it out.
Grace from Chicago Appleseed Foundation, Era Laudermilk from the Chicago from Cook County Public Defender's Office, our own president, Mr. Victor Dixon, and I'm Tony Lowry. We invite you to join the discussion. Call us here at the station at 773-591-1690. Again, that's 773-591-1690. In our segment number two, we're going to bring in an old friend, Charlene Grace from Chicago Appleseed Foundation. And Charlene will talk about cash bail reform and criminal court costs and fees. Charlene, first of all, give us a kind of capsule overview of Chicago Appleseed Fund for Justice and the work that you do in Chicagoland communities.
Sure, thank you. Thanks for having me. Chicago Appleseed is a small research and advocacy nonprofit that's focused on court reform. And we work in the civil courts, such as the family courts. We work in federal immigration courts and also the criminal courts. And I'm the senior criminal justice policy analyst and staff attorney at Chicago Appleseed.
So, cash bail reform, why is it needed in Cook County?
Great question. So in my role at Chicago Appleseed, one of the things I do is I help convene and facilitate the Coalition to End Money Bond, which is a group of 12 community-based organizations and also law and policy organizations working to eliminate the role that money plays in our pretrial justice system. Because in Cook County, forever, basically as long as we've been doing bond court and prosecuting people criminally, it's the same around the country. The main thing that is determined whether or not someone is in jail or they're free pending trial, everyone's supposed to be presumed innocent, but the main thing that has determined whether or not someone is locked up or free has been their access to money. How much money they, their loved ones, people in their community around them can come up with to pay and get them free. And that's fundamentally unfair. And we know that it has a huge impact on racial disparities because of the wealth gap in communities of color versus white communities. And that means that when we introduce money, we introduce unfairness. So the Coalition and Money Bond has been working to eliminate the role of money, and in doing that, also make sure that there are fewer people in jail overall.
Okay. Now, I know there's been some decreases in the amount of people who now receive cash bond, e-bond options, where before, I think, only 35% of people in Cook County Jail were receiving I-bonds. Now I think that number is up to 65%. How are you guys looking at that as far as pushing that forward to just end that process altogether or increase opportunities for people to receive bonds on their own recognizances?
That's a great question. So as Era mentioned in our last segment, in September of last year, Cook County Chief Judge Timothy Evans signed an order that require judges to set bonds and amounts that people can pay. So instead of setting a bond and then someone, in the majority of cases, people not being able to afford to pay it and them ending up in the jail, even though they had a way out if they had enough money, what we're seeing now is less use of money bonds. But we are still seeing, according to the most recent data that's come out, that only about 50% of the people who are given money bonds are able to pay them. So we still see that unfairness. And what we'd like to see is a situation in which no one is incarcerated pretrial while they're legally innocent simply because of how much money they have. So we do want to see the number of money bonds continue to decrease that are set originally. We want to see fewer people in the jail, get it back below 6,000 and even further than that. And we want to see any money bonds that are set being set in amounts that people can pay.
Now, I know this past session, I think this is the 100th General Assembly or 101, that there was some state legislation trying to address the issue. What kind of progress has been done at the state level to support the work you guys are doing?
Good question. So last year, the Bail Reform Act of 2017 was passed, and it did a number of positive things. It guaranteed that people had access to public defenders in bond court hearings and bail hearings where these very important decisions are being made, as Victor pointed out. Whether or not someone's free or they're in jail pending trial, it actually changes the outcome in their case, and it changes the length of time they receive on sentences. It has a tremendous impact on everything else that happens later. And the Cook County Public Defender has always represented people in their bail hearings, but that's not true around the state. Around the state, there were people having bail hearings by phone where there was no defense attorney present. So we know that's something that's going to make a difference in other counties, even though it doesn't necessarily require a change in Cook County. That legislation also put into state law the fact that any conditions of release other than money should be the least restrictive possible. So that goes to requiring judges to use electronic monitoring and home confinement only when it's really required, and making sure that there's strict standards or trying to create strict standards for the use of those conditions that we know can also have negative impact on people's lives. And then it also created a system for review within 7 days if someone is in jail because they can't pay a bond. For people with certain charges, they're entitled under the state law to a review of that bond, with the goal, again, of ensuring that people are not incarcerated pretrial only because of not being able to pay a money bond.
And I think one of the sponsors of that legislation was L.G. Sims, who his office is about a half a mile from here, and we also had L.G. at our annual policy conference last year. So the second part of taking monetary motivation out of the criminal justice system is your court fees and fines project. So tell our listeners about the work you guys are doing with court fees and fines.
Yes. So one of the things that is, again, something we do in Illinois and in Cook County, but it's really a problem across the country, is using fees assessed on people who are in the court system, often people who are from our most marginalized communities, charging them court fines, court fees, court costs, and then using that money to actually run the court system instead of funding it through some more equitable means. And we at Chicago Appleseed and with other partner organizations have been working to decrease the reliance on these so-called user fees and user costs, because we don't think that's how we should fund an essential government service. And there was also a state legislative task force that looked into the issue and examined it and found that in addition to sort of taking money out of vulnerable communities that need to hold on to those resources, it also was very unfair because different counties operated very differently around the state, so that someone who was stopped for a certain kind of traffic violation in DuPage or in Cook County or in Will County would have very different obligations than later as their case progressed, financial obligations. So there is currently a bill pending. It's House Bill 4594 that is the result of that task force report and their recommendations. And that's a terrific bill that really needs to be supported because it would create a waiver for people who are unable to pay those court costs. And it would also create a sliding scale so that the costs and fees that are assessed against people when they're convicted in criminal cases and in traffic cases, there would be some sort of standard around the state. But essentially, it sort of eliminates the extra punishment that people who couldn't afford to pay would endure. You know, they would have dings on their credit score. They would be denied access to housing, all the sorts of things that come up with debt collection and late fees and penalties, and they would essentially have to deal with a whole bunch of other downstream punishment from that case just because of how much money they owed that they couldn't afford to pay.
And in a lot of situations, because I get calls from people around the state, in a lot of situations people are reincarcerated because they cannot pay the fees and fines. And another important part of that is that your sentence is not complete until all fees and fines are paid. So I've talked to people who may have completed probation, but here 4 years later, they haven't paid fees and fines. So when you're trying to get your record sealed, there's a waiting period of 3 years after completion of sentence. So that person is still not eligible to benefit from the new sealing expansion. So I think the fees and the monetary motivation in our system, we congratulate Chicago Appleseed for really stepping up, hitting a home run on these issues, and they're issues directly related to poverty in the communities, and they're also related to, in most of our criminal justice system, that people don't see the humanity of the people that it's impacting, because, again, the image that most people see, and especially in Chicago where we hear about the violence, is not a person like myself who has a criminal record, but they see the mugshot that we're going to see on the news tonight. So that's the image that's thrust throughout, and people are seeing that these people are not deserving of help. So I think it's a great job to take that monetary motivation out of our court system in spite of the opposition and the fight that you guys are facing to reform our system.
You know, that's really, Tony and Charlotte, very interesting because, you know, this is kind of like a vestige of the old Jim Crow era approach where after slavery ended, these kind of fines and fees were used to create a pretense for incarcerating people and then basically contracting them out to work on farms and in factories and all of that, and in essence re-enslaving them because they were not able to pay fees and fines, and allowing those, the accumulation of those fines to be used as justification for keeping them in prison for a year or even more. And the fact that here we are in 2018 and we're still fighting this battle, it's disappointing, but at the same time we appreciate Chicago Appleseed keeping the fight going, and hopefully with this legislation we'll have a big impact. What bill was that again? That
was the Criminal and Traffic Assessment Act, which is House Bill 4594.
Okay.
And how can people get in contact with you, Charlene, and help and support this initiative with Chicago Appleseed?
Sure. So if you go to our website, it's chicagoappleseed.org, or you look us up on social media under Chicago Appleseed, there will be our contact information and my personal contact information as well.
Okay. Thanks, Charlene. Okay, next we're going to shift our focus and we're going to bring our president, Victor Dixon, back in to talk about Safer Reimagined or the vision and our next steps for Safer Foundation as far as our community impact and the services and the work we want to do on a policy advocacy level to support people with arrest and conviction records.
Well, you know, Tony, SAFER has been around a long time, 46 years. We have a great storied history. But like any other organization, we have to, you know, make sure that our work is viable, that we have to look out toward the future and make sure that we need to things that we need to change, that we address those changes, improve, expand. And that's what we're doing. I mean, I think we're still very much involved in advocacy around ways to bring down the population of the prison, ways to help people reenter, trying to create more job opportunities, trying to really deal with the perception of people with records as employees, helping employers understand that most of these companies that are hiring people with records are having tremendous success. They're loyal, dedicated, hardworking people, and it's interesting because there's a body of research that's beginning to emerge that shows that people with records actually, in many cases, work out to be better employees, which is kind of interesting. So that's important work for us. I think we are very focused on this intersection of poverty and our justice system. And we look at it from the standpoint of the fact that most of the people who were incarcerated were poor before their incarceration. Their family income drops after being incarcerated, and then they'll earn about 40% less for the rest of their life because of their record, unless there's some intervention. And for us, it's important for that intervention to involve helping them develop and acquire the skills and education they need to move into higher wage employment. Because if we can lift them out of poverty, we can break that cycle of recidivism, and that's a big focus of ours. You know, partly to do that, we're looking at how we deliver our services, improving on the service delivery, expanding our availability of housing for the reentry population, expanding our treatment services. We're looking at expanding our offices. We've, you know, increased our staff in our office out in South Holland. We've increased our staff on the west side at 808 South Kedzie, increased our staff out in Davenport, Iowa. And we're looking at new opportunities to open up new offices. There's a need for more of our services, particularly on the south side of the city and in other locations. You mentioned earlier the mobile unit. I think that's very important because that really increases the reach and allows us to bring services to a community. All of those kind of things are very important for us as we kind of reimagine this work that we do. And I think the final thing is really we've been launching businesses, and we've been doing that because we've got to create alternative sources of revenue that can help us do the services and provide the programs that we have to offer. And those businesses also give us an opportunity to actually employ people with records ourselves. So we're very excited about that, about launching more social enterprises. That's a very important part of our future. So SAFER is growing, and we're trying to serve more people in more places in better ways. That's really what we're trying to do. And we certainly encourage anyone who has a family member or friend that needs to reach out to us, needs our services. You can reach us at the saferfoundation.org on the web. You can contact us at 888-972-3374. That's 888-972-3374. So, you know, we are going to be winding up this first season. Before we go, we have some announcements, though, and we'd like our co-producer, Kimberly Van, to make a few announcements.
Thanks, Victor. SAFER will host a seven-month coding camp facilitated by Crimson Technology Group. The camp will run June 4th through December 28th and is free to participants. The ideal candidate will have a conviction or arrest, high school diploma, or GED. The target age is 18 to 26. However, we will consider those who are older. The orientations for the coding camp are May 22nd at 9948 South Halsted at 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. The camp will prepare individuals for a career in coding. After graduation, our average certified coder makes between $25 and $35 per hour. For more information, you can email Ernest Wilson at ernest.wilson@saferfoundation.org, or you can call 888-972-3374. As part of its mission, Urban Partnership Bank participates in financial literacy workshops administered throughout the city of Chicago. UPB has also partnered with SAFER and conducted Second Chance Financial Literacy Seminars at SAFER's Adult Transition Centers located in the North Lawndale community. These two transition centers allow incarcerated individuals to serve out the last 30 days to 24 months of their sentences in a community-based work release setting. These centers give participants the opportunity to transition to community life and employment prior to their release in order to improve the likelihood that they will become productive members of the community. Through this collaboration, UPB engaged approximately 100 individuals with a presentation that covered financial topics such as saving and budgeting, debt management, identity theft, and benefits of relying on traditional financial service providers instead of predatory or non-traditional ones. It is important to us that all members of our communities find financial security, and this is why we do what we can to share any knowledge we have that will help our fellow community members succeed. Financial literacy workshops are a crucial tool for us as they enable us to teach people the skills they will need to build a comfortable financial future for themselves. UPB. Speaking of sponsors, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their support: BMO Harris Bank, ComEd, Uris Dining Services, Presence Health, AT&T, BKD LLP, Crawford Investment, GE Healthcare, Cantor and Morgan, Patented Lisa Foundation, and U.S. Bank. Join us to help celebrate the graduation of Reconstruction Technology Partners' first cohort of apprentices and to explore the renovation of SAFER's community office, made possible by the hard work and skill of the RTP crew. This event will take place at the SAFER Community Office at 808 South Kedzie on Friday, June 8th, from 9 until 4 p.m. For more information and to RSVP, contact Marcus Eggleston at 708-501-0774. Finally, you can find Season 1 of SAFER Transitions on our website. You can also learn more about SAFER Foundation at www.saferfoundation.org. You can contact us at SAFER Transitions at saferfoundation.org. You can call us at 888-972-3374 or follow us on social media on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks, Victor.
Well, thanks, Kimberly, and thank you for helping to create SAFER Transitions. And, you know, it's a little bittersweet to be here at the last episode, Tony. But something I want to touch on, you mentioned software development jobs. And, you know, one of the things that we've realized here at SAFER, in our country we have over 6 million open jobs right now. Our unemployment rate is at 4.1%. It's predicted to drop down to 3.5%. We have an issue in our country. Our country is in need of skilled workers in a lot of areas, in manufacturing, in construction, in transportation, in hospitality, food services, also in IT. So right now, there are about 350,000 open software development jobs around the country. And this is a field where you don't have to have a college degree. I don't even know if you have to have a high school diploma unless the employer requires that. But with all of the people graduating this May from colleges and junior colleges, that's still going to leave over 300,000 open software development jobs. So this new program that you talked about, this coding camp, is a tremendous opportunity, particularly for the young people who really are adept at utilizing their technology. Well, you know, SAFER, our tagline is a road to a better future. That's what we're all about. We're trying to help individuals with arrest and conviction records not just reenter the community and go back into the same situation they were in before, the same poverty that they were in before, the same dire need. We try to equip them and to help them get on a different path, a path that is a brighter future where there's more hope, there's more opportunity, there are more options, and they don't have to do things that would run counter to our justice system. When we do that, it not only helps them, it's in the best interest of our whole society. Employers get workers that they need. The taxpayers are not paying to lock people up in jails and prisons and do nothing, and then have to take care of their children. They can take care of their own children. But more than anything, these individuals have talent. They have ability. They have dreams. They have ambitions. They work hard. There's an opportunity here to put people to work, not just giving them a second chance, but for many of them, it's the first chance they'll have to really live the life that maybe God intended them to have in the first place. And so that's what we're all about. We're glad to be on WVON. We want to thank Melody Spann Cooper, our WVON engineers, Titus Williams and Isaac Taylor, the entire WVON family, our producers, executive producer Landon Williams, co-producer Kimberly Van, production assistants Breanne King and Janice Jones. And Tony, I want to give a special thanks to you. You've been a warrior and a trooper out there pushing for justice, pushing for opportunity for people with records. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to Safer Transitions here on WVON Radio, AM 1690, the talk of Chicago. Thank you so much. Have a great afternoon and weekend. We don't need to escalate. See.